This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
And from the bed on which I was conceived in Liverpool. Yeah, I'm on my mum and dad's bed, Dave.
Ugh. You know you were conceived there.
Well, there's no plaque over it. But I'm guessing my mum and dad haven't bought a bed in about 50 years.
But it wasn't when they were away on vacation or perhaps in the back of the Morris Minor.
I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Have you talked to them about it?
I try and close my mind to that notion, but I'm back in Liverpool. It's 3:50 in the afternoon. It is pitch black.
Oh, thimblefuls of daylight.
I've just been out for lunch with my father and mother and all of his mates. It's one of their 79th birthday.
Yeah.
And they all, it's all the people I grew up with. In England, we call them our aunties and uncles, even though they're not related to us. Did you do that in London?
No.
And they pulled out birthday photos from years past, including one when my dad and his mate were exactly my age.
Yeah.
I'm feeling very mortal, Dave. I'm very aware how fleeting the human experience is, that Philip Larkin once wrote, life is slow dying. All I'm going to say is, Dave, I need this pod, and we must pod while we still can, Dave.
How much alcohol was consumed at lunch, Rog?
This is Liverpool.
Yep.
It'd gone 9:15 in the morning.
Yeah.
So I'd say a regular amount, Dave.
Good.
I'd say a regular amount, but enough about me. I'm the only person that came to Liverpool for the weather.
Yeah.
How's the blizzard?
Yeah. I'll save my story for how I adopted grandparents who live near to me. We didn't adopt our aunts and uncles, but I did adopt grandparents when I was younger. But I'll save that for another pod. It is Snowmageddon, Rog.
I feel terrible leaving you in it.
Except the snow didn't really happen.
Now, Mark Ragusa tweeted this to say, the blizzard in New York is like an Arsenal build-up without scoring a goal. Hashtag anticlimax.
Yeah, hashtag not a blizzard. Although I'm sure it has hit some surrounding areas around New York terribly, and we hope for everybody's safety and hope your heat's on. But it wasn't the 20-plus inches of snow that we were warned about.
We've never talked about this. Are you pro-snow or anti-snow? Which camp are you in?
I'm pro-snow, but I am a little bit suspicious of weathercasters, Rog, because I feel like that they are the goalkeepers. They are the NFL kickers of the news stations where they work, and they're always ignored. And the only time they ever get a moment, they're the linesmen, the referee's assistants of broadcasting. And the only time they ever get a moment in the sun, as it were, is when there's a potential blizzard, potential hurricane, potential storm. And so they have to inflate it or they get no screen time. So on the whole, I think that weather events are exaggerated.
See, I look at it that once upon a time, there were phrenologists, alchemists, and weathermen.
Yeah.
And over centuries, alchemists fell by the wayside. No one believes anymore you can turn base metals into gold.
Yeah.
Phrenology was discredited sometime around the Third Reich era. They did a very good job of disproving that for us. But somehow, the fallacy, the phony science of weathercasting has persevered, David. But I love the snow. It was the first poem we ever learned when we were five in England, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Robert Frost.
Yeah, good one.
I love the idea of snow, and I'm just sorry I'm not with you to dig out together.
Yeah. Had a really nice moment in the snow morning, a very Manhattan moment in the snow, is I walked out of my apartment building, and my next-door neighbours in the floor of the apartment building where I live were taking a family photo. But obviously, it was a mom and a dad and the two kids and their two dogs, because it's a snow day. All the schools are out in New York City. And they were trying to take a family photo with like a self timer to go and get it done, and they were like struggling in the snow because families love taking pictures of themselves in the snow. And I went in and I took the photo, and Rog, I nailed it. Might be going up on our Instagram later. I took a couple of squares.
I can't wait to see it. Made me feel like I'm there, because I'm not there, Dave. I actually bailed on my family and four kids with blizzard coming. I bailed, got an early flight out to Liverpool. I'm here to make a film about football managers and the secret art, the secret science of football management, which will run on NBC very shortly. And then I'm going to reunite with you in warm climes.
Yes, we're going to Azerona. out west for a Super Bowl of some kind.
Oh, yes, I've heard about this Super Bowl.
As I call it, Super Bowl X-Lix is what it is, I believe. It's the X-Lix.
I remember when it was just Super Bowl double X.
Yeah, Super Bowl X-Lix.
I remember that the first one I ever saw was Super Bowl double X, too naughty to be seen, XX rated Super Bowl.
Was that January 1986, Rog?
The first one I ever saw, I stayed up all night with my best friend Jamie to watch the Bears. It was Jim McMahon and Walter Payton.
Against the Patriots.
Yeah, Tony Eason. Steve Grogan entered their second-string quarterback.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at him as he put his helmet on. He was a bald man. And I just remember turning around to Jamie and going, oh, my God, that man is so old.
Yeah.
And then I actually just Wikipedia'd his age, and he's about 15, 20 years younger than we are now, Dave.
Yeah, I saw... my first Super Bowl, Rog, was Super Bowl Zix, XIX, 19, I believe that translates
Montana
to.
Against Marino.
Oh, that was a big one. I remember I was at boarding school at the Mercersburg Academy in Pennsylvania, and I was walking. I didn't really know much about NFL football, didn't really know much about Super Bowl, and I was walking past, and a guy who I went to school with called Matt Hoffman, who later went to the US Air Force, a great American, he walked past me, and as I was walking past him, he just said, it's Super Bowl Sunday, yeah! And that's what I wake up, punch the air, that's what I wake up every day on Super Bowl Sunday.
Americans are so good at punching the air. They punch the air. No matter what you think of them, no nation punches the air.
No one better.
Like Americans.
No one better. And it's just not what the English people do on FA Cup final day, Rog, or the boat race, or any of our big events.
I've got to say, as an Englishman, as a kid, it was thrilling to watch the Super Bowl. It was like no other event. I mean, we had to stay up all through the night.
It was in colour.
It was in extra technicolour there. Yeah. The English sports are in colour, but it was like this drab, washed out, kind of cumbersome colour.
Because the air's different, and the colour moves through the air differently in England than it does in America.
Oh, you can't just... But I just think that American life buzzes with vitality and like a pulsating energy that England lacks.
Yeah, it's true.
I persuaded my mother after I watched the game, persuaded my mother to send me to Chicago that very summer.
Yeah.
To visit my pen friend. We've talked about this before, and the Bears are actually in London playing the Cowboys in the first London Bowl, and I welcomed them back to the airport at 4 a.m. Mike Ditka shouted at me for taking photos, but the players were just elated that there was a little English boy there to welcome. I got photos with Jimbo Covert, with Matt Sui, and my only regret in life of any kind is that my camera jammed when Walter Payton posed for a photo with it. It jammed twice. He was so nice, he waited the first time.
Yeah.
But a week later, Dave, I went to my first ever NFL game.
Yeah.
It was an exhibition between the Bears and I think Gary Hogaboon's Indianapolis Colts.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who else was attending his first ever NFL game in that very same stadium on that very same day?
I do know this, but the goldfish I am, I've completely and utterly forgotten.
A young, impressionable Arlo White.
Oh, that's right.
Can you believe that?
It's amazing.
They
all the way from Leicester.
The sports games back then.
He must have been about 8 years old, Rog. Isn't he much younger than us, Arlo?
I imagine Arlo went there with like a tape recorder and commentated on it.
He almost certainly did.
I just wish I'd met him back then. 8 year old Arlo and like 15 year old Roger, like an early meeting. I am going to get the photos from Arlo of young Arlo.
Do you think he talked about William Refrigerator Perry's meaty American forehead, even at that age? except it would have been meaty American forehead.
Meaty American forehead.
Of William Refrigerator Perry.
All right, I mean, we're falling into a moment with America, but I want to make it clear, I'm very upset with America right now.
Okay, why?
The official end of the British Empire was sounded this week. After Hershey's company legally took on Let's Buy British Imports and made them stop importing Cadbury's chocolate from England into America. Kit Kat bars, Toffee Crisps, Yorkie bars.
This is affecting the Cadbury's. This is affecting the Cadbury's cream egg, I believe, Rog.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we used to have America, India, Hong Kong and Bhutan.
Yeah.
Now we don't even have a packet of Maltesers, David.
It's very, very true. It's going to be
over.
What is this going to do to Myers of Keswick, our favourite English store up on Hudson Street that supplies us our pies? I'm worried that they're going to go out of business if they can't sell all of that English candy.
America was just worried about the oil price dropping. The pie market had terrible fluctuations in recent days.
This could have a dramatic knock-on effect on the supply of pies into America.
Yeah. Supply and demand of pies, Dave. While I'm talking about America, very quickly, I want to just say Ernie Banks, Mr. Cub, let's play two. Rest in peace.
Oh, yeah.
An amazing man, hit with class and power relentlessly. And the thing I loved about him was that he played on a team that was mired through much of his career in what would have been a relegation battle if you had them in America.
Yeah.
Yeah, he never lost his joy. He never lost his passion. And I think he understood better than anyone what the essence of sports is all about. What a bloke. I will miss him terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. Rest in peace. I went and saw some terrible sport this week, Rog. I went to see the New York Knicks versus the Orlando Magic at the Garden. And I was reminded yet again of what I love so much about Premier League football, which is the fact that the crowd pays attention to the game. At every moment, that the crowd are in the event. I honestly don't think anybody in that stadium watched more than 2 to 3 plays entirely in that entire game. It was unwatchable. But even then, like, a lot of English football is unwatchable. But
yeah, but it's unwatchable, but you don't need to tell us when to shout, defense!
Oh, they didn't even bother with that, honestly. It was just, there was no defense. There was no defense played at any point in the entire game. Both teams, it was like 113 to 106. It's an NBA score from the mid-1980s. You just don't see it anymore.
You know, I thought a lot this weekend about how great Premier League football is. Do you know why?
Because the FA Cup was on, Roger.
Yeah, because there wasn't any of it. And I had to spend almost all the weekend playing Roger Goodell, Bill Belichick, Sepp Blatter, Mary Kill.
How did that turn out for you?
I don't know. It's like an M.C. Escher painting. Your brain just turns around infinitely, infinitely, infinitely. I think it's just kill, kill, kill.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult.
Although I might just marry Blatter so I could kill him.
that's interesting. Yeah, while you're effing him would be great.
It takes a game to another place, but to the football, David.
Yeah, we got a packed show. We delve into a weekend of FA Cup upsets, including Chelsea's shock loss to League One's Bradford and Middlesbrough's dismissal of Manchester City. We discuss the possibility of an MLS player strike and the Von Trapp's upcoming game in Chile. We launch a custom Xbox contest in which we call for US women's national team nicknames, and we welcome Jacksonville Jaguars kicker Josh Scobie and Cleveland Browns punter Spencer Lanning to the
GFOP.
Pod. Yeah, GFOP Spencer Lanning.
But what I think is one of the more fascinating conversations I've had in a long, long, long time. The secret art, the secret mind, the secret everything.
World. The secret world of NFL kickers.
And punters.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
David, I'd just say, the next time someone tells you the magic of the FA crap is over,
yeah,
show them your January 24th, 2015 tattoo, David.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Rog. To the football.
That's the day, yeah, to the full. You've got to open a can for me, Dave. I've just got a bottle of Guinness here. It doesn't make the same sound.
Okay, here we go. The can's opening to the football, the Guinness. Oh, you and your dog. Are you lying on your back or on your front, Rog, on your parents' bed?
On the plastic on my parents' bed. The plastic sheeting.
Did they put plastic sheeting there just because they knew you were going to lie on it? Or is that there permanently?
I like to think it's just for me.
Oh my God, England is so depressing. We could never move back there. People say to me all the time that when they meet me, it's like, oh, are you thinking of moving back to England? I'm like, no. It's never, ever, ever going to happen. To the football, Rog.
Oh, to Tweed. And to the true magic of the FA crap.
Yeah.
Is when the crap or the cup overfloweth with a sweet drink called Schadenfreude.
Oh, we love that. We're just lower league sides, Rog, beating their Premier League, you know, big brothers. That's what we really like about
City
the FA Crap.
Out! Southampton, out! Spurs, out you go! Chelsea, what are you looking at? Get out, I said.
Very true.
And we saw the dynamic that drives the cup.
Yeah.
The revenge for discards and loonies and flotsam and jetsam who once played four Premier League clubs and have plummeted. It's their chance to show their former masters who've rejected them that they can still belong. We saw this weekend over and over again, the likes of Patrick Bamford, who we will talk about, Dave.
Yeah.
The FA crap is the ultimate proving ground. It's English football's last chance saloon. At Drake Jesse tweeted us to say what the magic of the FA Cup is. He said, so far, Bristol City are answering the question, how much construction equipment can you store at one football ground?
Ashton Gate. That's hilarious. Okay, Rog, first off, let's get it out of the way. Chelsea 2, Bradford City 4? The Bantams came back from 2-0 down to beat the team atop the Premier League. Chelsea looked to be cruising after Ramirez capped off a lightning-quick counter in the 38th minute to put Chelsea up 2. But Bradford stormed back, scoring in the 41st minute and three times, Rog, in the second half to knock Mourinho's men out of their first competition of the season. Jose Mourinho stated after the game that he was ashamed and embarrassed, Rog.
I mean, I'm fascinated. When I saw the game, Dave, it was as big a shock as Ronaldo actually getting a red card in La Liga.
I know, he's like, for what? For what? What did I do?
I mean, Chelsea leaked 4 goals, yep. Part one. And they're hammered.
At home, Rog. At home.
I mean, they're hammered by a team of rejects, including 2 Chelsea rejects, Dave. Loanees and free transfers. But I've got to ask you, how big a deal was it for you? Because I've come to believe that an FA Cup exit with the FA Cup, this kind of beleaguered, withered, septic, pussy wound, I think it carries all the shock value of a Colin Farrell sex tape. Doesn't the world just shrug and move on at this stage?
Well, look, the FA Cup, just like everything else in football, its importance depends on where the narrative of your team is. And I would say that, you know, a few weeks ago, I remember when Everton went out, Rog, you were very upset about it because for you, the FA Cup was important this season as an Everton fan. Obviously, as a Chelsea fan, the FA Cup isn't very important this season. However, do you ever want to be humiliated at home losing to Bradford? And not a team in the Championship, Rog, a team 2 divisions down in League One. You never want to go and lose. Look, I think that's an optimistic way of view of thinking about it. It's a positive way of thinking about it. There's one other positive way of thinking about it. And then there's a very negative way of thinking about it. The other positive is that this was not Mourinho's regular starting lineup. He wasn't playing his regular central defensive partnership of Cahill and Terry. He made a lot of changes at the back. Christensen coming in and playing at right back. He didn't have Matic there. He didn't have Jazz Hands up front. He didn't have Fabregas from the start. He played Salah. He did a lot of things with the lineup. And so you can sort of comfort yourself as a Chelsea fan saying, oh, this isn't our regular team. This isn't a team that have, like, you know, won all their games at home in the Premier League. The negative for Mourinho and the negative for Chelsea and the slightly worrying, the question mark it puts on the rest of their season, where they're still in the Capital One Cuppity Cup Cup, they're still in the Premier League, obviously the race, like, right there in the Premier League race, and Champions League coming up, is that he simply has not rotated his squad enough this season to have enough faith in these players and that these players to have enough faith in playing with each other that they can switch their lineup. And he's going to go back tonight against Liverpool in the Capital One Cuppity Cup Cup, and I guarantee you're going to see Terry, you're going to see Matic, you'll see Fabregas, if not from the start, play at least a half of football. He just doesn't have the squad to rotate, and that is the weakness of this Chelsea side.
And I thought it was fascinating because it did come off a narrative week for Chelsea in which Mourinho said before the game it would be a disgrace if they lost. Courtois talked cockily about the possibility of this team doing the quadruple. Quadruple no more. 2-0 inside 38 minutes. Chelsea appeared to be cruising Swansea style. And then Steed, the journeyman Steed, kind of turned the Chelsea defence inside out. The second goal was pieced together by 2 Chelsea rejects, Murray and not. The third and fourth goal were stunners. I mean, there was a point where Bradford were tearing Chelsea apart with their movement and ideas, and the Bradford fans were laughing. Mourinho's right, your fans are shite. Beautiful moment at the end. Jose Mourinho tried to head to the locker room early, but the Bradford manager, Phil Parkinson, rejected the hand, and he had to linger awkwardly until the final whistle. Well, I have to say, Jose Mourinho did then go into the Bradford locker room and apparently shook the hands of every single City player and staff member, which is, a side of the man that we don't often dwell upon. But this was Bradford's first win at Stamford Bridge since 1912, Dave. We just started podding that year. New Mexico became America's 47th state.
Yeah, the First World War. World War One really got in the way of our podcast, though, Rich.
Podcasting took a while to rebound after that, Dave.
Yeah, you're right, it did.
It was sometimes you thought it would never catch on, weren't it?
Yeah.
the Cuban Missile Crisis. Around then, we almost gave up. This Bradford side, I won't allow you to deflect. They're from double-A baseball. They're from a northern town that's famed for its curries, best curries in England. Journeymen, free transfers, loanies. But how do you feel? You've got this big City clash. You've had Harry Kane have the game of his life. Now you've had John Stead, this journeyman, have the game of his life. How do you feel about the kind of the defensive shield and the slow pace of this defensive shield ahead of what could be the biggest game of the season?
Well, this was not his defensive shield. I mean, Matic wasn't playing, Terry wasn't playing. It just wasn't the normal defensive shield that they play, so I'm not that concerned about it. This is a team that he's never played before. In fact, multiple members of the team have never played with each other in literally a training game, let alone in a real clash. I'm not that concerned about it. What I am concerned about is that going into three competitions, that still two of which really matter for Chelsea, the Champions League and the Premier League, we still don't have many players who can come off that bench and have a lot of confidence. You know, one of the only players who's got that confidence is Andre Schürrle. He might not even be at Chelsea by the time we get through the transfer window. So there are some questions about Chelsea's depth. And going into the end of the season, you need depth, not just because you've got a lot of games come up very quickly, because the players who've played all season, and he's rotated his squad so little, are just getting leggy and exhausted as they get into 50, 60 games by the end of the season.
I believe Mourinho may actually love that they've been knocked out. I mean, he'd spent a very odd week trying to pick any kind of fight he could within his club, urging the fans, he said, to give 25% of the noise Liverpool fans had supplied at Anfield. I think Mourinho is a guy who doesn't like things to be too good. I mean, we're obsessed providing too many assists. Courtois, just a human force field. Diego Costa single-handedly triggering a boom in Britain's blue glove industry. I think he believes a team that's too confident is on cruise control, and anyone that's on cruise control will soon become undone. I've got a feeling this loss, this bizarre loss, I think it will make sure that Chelsea's guard is always up for the rest of the season, especially with City coming. City-Chelsea, two slightly wounded Labradors fighting each other. English sports fans like nothing more.
Maybe, Rog, but you could have said the same thing after the loss at Newcastle. You could have said the same thing after the loss at Tottenham. You know, this is a third big knock, and just makes me a little bit concerned about his depth of squad. Anyway, Rog, another big team went out. Man City, 0. Middlesbrough, 2. Best day in K. Murray's life, Rog. The Championship's second-place team beats the Premier League's second-place side. Borough keeper Thomas Mejias withstood a barrage of shots before Patrick Bamford, he's a Chelsea loanee, Rog, made it 1-0 in the 53rd minute. City then seemed to wilt, and Spanish sub Kike added a second, sending Borough into the fifth round.
Drogba out, Bamford in!
Yeah, he's a fantastic player, Patrick Bamford. He's never really got a shot at Chelsea, and unsure whether he ever will, Rog.
Yeah, he's got a huge head for a lad so young. There's something a bit Daniel Radcliffe about him.
Yeah.
I kept expecting him to conjure spells rather than unfurl elite athletic skills. But we've got to say, Middlesbrough, when we were young, Dave, they were a power.
Big club.
From a grim, industrial, northeastern city. I do love a diagonal stripe on a football jersey.
Oh, I love it. We've always loved it.
Peru 1978, still to me, one of the best of all time, along with USA 1994. It was an odd game. City had chances, a lot of them. Their play, again, was very, very Arsenal-y. It was very like the Arsenal game. They had a lot of possession. Jovetic, again, had so many chances and didn't convert. Silva, Aguero, Milner also had plenty of chances to run up the score. But City's defence, again, Davo, capitulated in that 52nd minute. They were torn apart.
Yeah, definitely. And a difficult loss for them. And yet, probably the same as Chelsea, not a competition that they're paying an enormous amount of attention to at this stage. I think they're more concerned about getting Boney and Toure back from the African Cup of Nations, Rog.
We'll chat about those guys in a minute. I'll say for Middlesbrough, they're managed by a Spaniard, Aitor Carranca, former Real Madrid turned Colorado Rapid. Hats off to them. They played emboldened in the second half. I mean, they passed with confidence. They dared to attack. They hit the post through live wire journeyman striker Lee Tomlin. I didn't watch the game live, Dave. I DVR'd this.
Yeah.
And watched it later in the day. I knew the score, but I was still unable watching it. I couldn't help but I still didn't believe Middlesbrough were going to win this game until the final whistle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even though City did this last year, they lost to Wigan last season. They had so many chances, so much possession, 65%, 24 shots. The keeper, Jovetic, is becoming the most awkward thing to watch in football, apart from that Fox halftime show where they make their guy stand on a little shrunken football field.
Yeah.
I revere Rob Stone. I love Warren Barton. Yeah. Alexi is our Lord and Saviour. I don't understand why they make them hover awkwardly and don't let them opine in comfort. There's all this shtick now about City being overconfident, returning late from their warm weather training in Abu Dhabi the night before. But then, right at the end, it's what football is all about. The Middlesbrough fans singing, "You're just a crap Man United," as Enrique Garcia finished with aplomb. And it was probably 2-0. It was as unsettling a score as watching Sarah Bunting at Lord Grantham's dinner party. How worried should City be, Dave? Two scoreless home games, no wins in three, 5 points back in the league, humiliated in the FA Cup, title bone crusher against Chelsea upcoming.
Well, they've got some of the same problems of Chelsea have in terms of the depth. I mean, you look at the squad and you think, oh, my God, they've got so much depth. But actually, you know, take out their key players. And there's definitely a question about how well that side gel with each other. The slightly more alarming thing for City, though, is just how some of their top players are not clicking. And I think that's happening at Chelsea. And at City right now, some of their very best players are just not on great form right now.
Yep. Said they're praying for the return of Yaya and New Bruy, Wilfred Bony, the space maker, back from the Africa Cup of Nations. By the way, a lot of you writing to ask, why did they play the Africa Cup of Nations in the middle of the season and the Asian Cup in the middle of the season? The honest truth is, short answer, the Africa Cup of Nations was founded in 1957. Asian Cup, I think, the year before. It's even older than the Euros, 1956.
Mm-hmm.
These two tournaments predate the Premier League by decades.
Yeah.
I mean, we always laugh. How dare they? But the honest truth is they've been doing it far longer than there ever was a Premier League.
Yeah. How dare the Premier League schedule games in the middle of the African Cup of Nations?
Exactly. Watch. I mean, to some extent, it's a kind of symbol of the now globalised world of football. When they founded the Africa Cup of Nations, there weren't too many African players who were playing in Europe. Very, very few. And that trickle has become a flood. Quick word on the Asian Cup. One of the most remarkable things I've seen in a long time, the participation of the Palestinian team. An amazing story. They didn't perform well from a scoreline perspective, but they did symbolically. It was really a remarkable and complex and a wonderful footballing story. There's a great article about the backstory to the Palestinian team, which we featured in our Raven, our newsletter.
Uh-huh.
If you didn't see it, you can look on our Facebook page and work out how to get it. But it's from a magazine called Plus 972. It's the best thing I've read in a long time.
Wonderful. Cambridge United 0, Manchester United 0, Roger.
What?
League 2, Cambridge United. So that is, it goes Premier League, Championship, League 1, League 2. This is the lowest full-time professional league in English soccer. League 2 Cambridge United holds an uninspired Man United, to say the least, to a draw in front of 8,000 people. That's a sellout at the Abbey. I've been to that ground. The U's goalkeeper, Chris Dunn, produced a series of brilliant saves to preserve the clean sheet and force a replay at Old Trafford. That is a huge day and a huge payday for Cambridge United, getting to go to Old Trafford and to get a portion of the receipts on that gate.
That game was on Friday evening. As it turned out, it's actually a good result compared to the ones that followed it, Dave. But it is odd that this late into the season, United are still plagued by the whole 3-5-2 versus 4-4-2 debate. Right before the game, Louis van Gaal, in a wonderful press conference, that if you haven't seen it, it's worth watching, he talked about how playing 4-4-2 gives him, quote, and it's better out of his mouth than it ever could be out of mine, Dave.
Queen's Park Raisins.
A twitchy ass was what it kept saying.
Oh.
It gave him a twitchy ass, and how twitchy his ass must have been at Cambridge, a place where, before the game, Cambridge United's manager publicly told his players they were not allowed to swap shirts with United, or else they'd have to buy replacements from the club shop. because they just couldn't afford it. Cambridge United's jersey sponsor, Mick George, is a local skip rental, or as you say in America, dumpster business. I mean, this is minor leagues. And Nicholas Hubert tweeted us back and said, skip rental? Isn't Chevy exactly in the same business?
Yeah.
But for United, Cambridge United in this battle of Uniteds, Chris Dunn was absolutely fabulous. Yanishai, from Manchester United's perspective, I thought he looked terrific, but it was very odd at the end of the game, Dave. Louis van Gaal said every aspect of the match is against us, the pitch, the referee, everything was against us. I mean, I just found that shocking from a man who's pitching World Cup finalists and a glut of world-class players, or reportedly world-class players, on hundreds of thousands of dollars a week salary, against really the flotsam, the jetsam, the residue of minor league football.
Yeah, but ultimately a great result for Cambridge United, Rog, and what a payday.
Yeah, I mean, I love club chairman Dave Doggett said after the game, he said there's a lot of speculation about how much money the club will be getting. It's likely to be in excess of $2.26 million. Hopefully, he said, we can get the stadium done. We need to use the money to start putting in proper toilets. That's a lot of proper toilets, David.
Those are world-class toilets he can put in up there at Cambridge, Rog. Liverpool 0, Bolton 0. A stingy Bolton back four featuring St. Louis's own Tim Ream hold Brendan Rodgers' men to a draw at Anfield. Liverpool left to lament some controversial refereeing, Rog, and a series of strong saves from Bolton goalkeeper, the ginger-haired Hungarian Adam Bogdan.
He was fabulous. Gingy power.
Yeah.
Blunt Liverpool. Mario Balotelli, strangely now fit, not even able to make the bench, which is interesting. I mean, this game was on Fox 2, the joys of standard definition television, Debo, how I've missed it. And it was interesting to watch Tim Ream dust himself off from Jurgen's reject pile. He plays with poise and confidence. He is actually terrific on the ball. I mean, a lot of MLS stalwarts talk about how dodgy, how erratic he could be. But I believe that he may well end up getting back into the mix. I mean, he's just absolutely proficient on the ball compared to many of his competitors.
Brighton and Hove Albion 2, Arsenal 3, the defending FA Cup champions. That was Arsenal. Remember, they won that last year, Rog. They hold off Brighton at the Amex Stadium. Two men recently back from injury, Theo Walcott and Mesut Ozil, put Arsenal up 2-0 before Brighton pulled one back. But in the 59th minute, a thunderous Thomas Rosicky volley found its way past the Seagulls keeper and moved Arsenal into the fifth round.
Yeah, I mean, before the game, I spoke to my Arsenal mate, Michael Kerim.
Yeah.
Who was still giddy after the victory, the 2-0 performance over City. And the last thing he said to me, he said he was very concerned. He said he believed, watching that game, he said he believed that game smacked at the players turning around to each other and just saying, sod it, let's not listen to Arsene, let's do it our way. He said the tell was Arsene's face on the sideline. It looked as if he was as confused as what the events were happening and how his players were playing as we were at home. And Arsene, ahead of the game, came out and admitted it. He said, yeah, preparing for the game against City, the players reassured themselves, they lined up more defensively. Sometimes you have to listen to your players. So player power rife, and again making a difference. The only thing that's changing for Arsenal is the players are beefed up. Mesut Ozil, Theo Walcott playing clinically, and in this game, David, Thomas Rosicky, he was like it was like watching a Santi Cazorla.
Yeah, I tell you, his play over the last couple of months, he's really come along, returning to the greatness we witnessed. I'm witnessed in person at the 2006 World Cup, Rog. Okay.
Bit sad talking about him because he's got the face of a four-year-old child.
He does.
And B, you look at him, little Mozart, and it is a career smothered by injury. He could have been a contender kind of player. Arsenal fans will be delighted to have him return to form in the second half of the season alongside Cazorla, who I think has been taking Cazorla whatever pills Ramsey had ingested last season. Arsenal seem to only have enough special pills for one guy at a time.
Yeah. It's that boat neck he's wearing, the scoop neck he's wearing, his version of the tight Arsenal jersey, Rog. Okay, Southampton 2, Palace 3. Arguably, this was the game of the round, Rog. Fantastic game of football. Palace upend one of the Premier League's hottest clubs at St. Mary's in a game that featured 5 goals in the first 40 minutes. Marouane Chamakh's brace, Rog. Amazing form from Marouane Chamakh. And a Yaya Sanogo goal. Arsenal Sanogo keep Alan Pardew's Palace record at 100%. What a start for Pardew at Palace, Rog.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Newcastle fans thought his first name was Sack Pardew. Down at Palace, they now call him Super Alan Pardew. I wish someone would... That's Super Michael Davo.
Super Roger Bennett.
At Jeff Markman tweeted us to say, Yaya Sanogo, Marouane Chamakh combining to score has to be the greatest moment for spare parts since the island of misfit toys. Great tweet from at Drew McDonald. We asked, what is the Chumbawamba of Green Bay?
Yeah.
He referred to the fact that Al Giroux, the great Al Giroux, getting better and better every week, his legend. He went to Ripon College near Green Bay.
Wow.
Al Giroux is Green Bay's Chumbawamba. Wheels within wheels, David.
There's so many wheels, Rog. Okay, two other upsets. Blackburn 3, Swansea 1, a pair of late goals. See Blackburn pass 9-man Swansea at Ewood Park, Rog. And Spurs 1, Leicester 2, Tottenham concede twice in the final 7 minutes, failing to reach the fifth round for the third season in a row.
Arsenal now the bookies' favourites to win it all, followed by United, Liverpool and West Ham.
Oh, West Ham, my choice too. I watched the West Ham-Bristol City game as a kid. I rather liked Bristol City as a kid. I had an uncle who lived in Bristol, Rog. And I thought West Ham looked great. Andy Carroll, he's going to knock in a lot of goals in this competition. West Ham were dark horses, Rog. Although
give them the cup now. Don't even need to play favorites. The game. Give them the cup.
MLS, Rog, there could be a strike looming. With MLS's season rapidly approaching, there's talk of a possible strike. The league's current collective bargaining agreement expires at the end of January, and sides are reportedly at an impasse, over free agency.
Yeah. I mean, the notion of a strike, I think it's being overblown, like the notion of the blizzard hitting New York City. It's a complicated collective bargaining agreement. It expires, I think, at the end of this month. The meetings that have occurred thus far have been frustrating, I think probably quite emboldening for the players. There's 6 weeks until the season kicks off. Expect the brinkmanship to begin.
Yeah, absolutely. US men's national team versus Chile, Rog. We're just one day away from the US men's first match of 2015. The Van Traps take on Chile tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. Eastern on Fox Sports 1.
Yep, 8 uncapped players in the 23-man squad. Yep. Greg Shea, the first ever Orlando City player to wear at least a US warm-up suit. Mick Discarude, the first ever NYC FC player. Most interestingly for me, David, will be to watch Josie, how he shows in this game, the statement that he wants to make. And DeAndre Yedlin, who's returned already from Spurs. But this is all about jockeying for Olympic qualifying for the under-23s and for the Gold Cup. For the big boys, let the jockeying begin.
Yeah, US soccer a little preoccupied with another issue, Rog. As the US women prepare for this summer's World Cup in Canada, one of the team's biggest stars finds herself at the centre of controversy. US soccer suspended goalkeeper Hope Solo for 30 days after her husband, former NFL tight end Jeremy Stevens, was charged with DUI in Manhattan Beach, California last week. He was reportedly driving a US soccer official team van. Solo was in the van, but was not arrested. This is a complicated story, Rog.
It does, David. I mean, she arrived late for this camp.
Yeah.
This is just after the judge dismissing fourth-degree charges against her that have been ongoing. And then she goes out late at night, screams at the police, and then doesn't tell anyone when she comes back and just hopes no one will know. And then it breaks out over TMZ. Humiliating. I think US soccer. I mean, who does she think she is partying during training camp, Dave? Johnny Manziel?
Yeah.
Jeremy Stevens. I mean, I find the whole thing very, very odd. The Jeremy Stevens Hope Solo relationship, it's such a PR nightmare for the team who want to raise the profile of the entire women's game in this World Cup cycle. It's unbelievably damaging from a brand perspective, but this is clearly a woman who needs some support and counselling. If you want to know how this ends, you just have to watch Sid and Nancy, the Alex Cox movie. It is 100% Sid and Nancy.
Yeah. There does seem to be, though, a slightly different standard in how we, that's everyone in the media, and fans, and people in soccer administration, treat female athletes versus male athletes in terms of their off-field behavior and their off-field lives. And I'm not saying that what Hope Solo is doing is good and what her behavior off-field has been in any way, you know, not worthy of sanction. I'm just saying that reverse the headline and make this about a male soccer player, and we read terrible headlines about male soccer players. Reverse it about male American athletes, and we read terrible things about male American athletes all the time. And I just wonder if this is just sort of about American female team sports growing up a little bit. She's not going to be a role model for young, you know, preteen and teen girls, perhaps, but she is by far the best goalkeeper in the world, and she's had an amazing career for the US Women's National Team, Rog.
I mean, so you're, as long as Hope Solo keeps diving and protecting that ball in the way that only Hope Solo can, there's no problem.
Yeah, not no problem, but I wonder if it's as big a problem as we all make out because she's a female team athlete, and so therefore we want her to be something so different than what she actually is. Anyway, good. You know, it does seem as though they've laid out a plan for Hope Solo to return to the U.S. Women's National Team. There's a series of things it appears that she has to do, tasks that she's got to complete, probably affirmation statements that she's got to make. And let's just hope that Hope Solo goes through that and she finds her way back into the U.S. Women's National Team setup before the World Cup, Rog. Talking of the U.S. Women's National Team, we want to create some happy storylines for the U.S. Women's National Team by improving on that mouthful of a moniker. We want to give them a creative nickname befitting a team poised to be the biggest thing in Canada since Degrassi Junior High. Send us your suggestions for a new nickname for the American women that can match the wonder that is the Von Trapps, their male counterparts. We have a custom Xbox from the GFOPs at EA Sports for the winner, Rog.
No, just tweet us or email us. I think their official nicknames are the Yanks and the Stars and Stripes. I do think we can do better. By the way, the Bare Naked Ladies came after Degrassi Junior High, and their work is deeply, deeply ill-respected. We did come up with quite a good nickname, yeah. I think. Didn't we come up with one of our GFOPs came up with the Becker Women.
The Becker Women is excellent.
I think we can do better. Send in your ideas, send in your creative support, and let's change this team's karma now.
Okay, Rog. Last week, we had a chance to spend some time with several NFL kickers and punters for a piece that will air during NBC's pregame coverage Sunday, Rog, of the big game.
30, I think.
We sat down with two of them for an interview. Jacksonville Jaguars kicker Josh Scobie. He's a Texan who grew up playing against Clint Dempsey in soccer. And Browns punter Spencer Lanning is a South Carolinian and a Chelsea supporter, Rog. We actually had him on early this season after the Steelers' Antonio Brown kicked him square in the face during a punt return. Both men provided some interesting insight into the NFL's kicking fraternity. Here we are, Spencer Lanning.
It's like looking in a mirror.
Cleveland Browns, Josh Scobie yeah. of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Box in the box.
Close. Yeah. Punter, field goal, place kicker,
I got
Rog.
So many questions. Don't know where to begin. Diego Forlan,
yeah.
Uruguayan goal scorer, once compared scoring a goal, he said it's better than having an orgasm. Is that what it feels like to get a point after attempt?
Basic. Never really put it in those terms, but...
How about a 50-yard plus field goal?
I would say so, yes.
Game winner.
Yeah, because it happens about that often, I would say.
What is the ultimate feeling for a field goal kicker?
Hitting game-winning field goal. So you being the last person to touch the football and provide the winning points.
And how many times in your pro career have you got to do that?
8 times.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of fun. It is. There's nothing like it because you know that the game is either won or lost by you, and it makes it a lot of fun when it happens.
When you were a kid growing up, Longview, Texas for you, Rock Hill, South Carolina.
South Carolina.
the balloon capital of the world.
Balloon capital.
Your town motto? Always on.
I guess. Sure.
Did you have a poster of Mark Mosley or Jan Stenerud on your bedroom wall?
I didn't. You know what? I didn't start playing American football until my senior year of high school. I played soccer or European
soccer,
but soccer, as yeah. you say, all growing up. So from when I was 4 to 18, and got into American football a lot later.
Did you have Reggie Roby or Tom Tupper up there?
No, and believe it or not, I didn't really follow the NFL that much when I was growing up. I was more of a soccer kid and played
soccer.
Yeah, I started playing American football my junior year in high school. Sort of took off from there.
So Longview, Texas, soccer hotbed.
Oh, yeah.
Some unbelievable players have come through there. Mm-hmm. You must have played against a couple in high school?
I did. A lot of guys came from there. The Dallas Texans were a club team that had a lot of talent, a lot of guys that played college and professional. One in particular was Clint Dempsey. He was he played in my district in high school at Nacogdoches High School, and I played at Longview High School, and we played the same position. He was a year behind me, but when he got up to varsity, he made me look terrible.
Did you just trash talk him, be like, you could never get a three-pointer, you'll never be a field goal player?
Well, I hadn't even started playing football then. But
you didn't have that trash in your ammo box.
No,
at that point.
All I would do was foul him. I would kick him in the shins as hard as I could.
How much better was he at that age than everybody else?
He was a lot better. You could tell that he was the best guy on the field.
Wow. Too much.
Yeah,
too much.
He was a lot better than me. That's why I started playing American football.
I'm fascinated by kickers and punters. I mean, you're kind of like of the squad, but you're also incredibly distinct from them. Do you both feel that?
Well, yeah. I feel that every time I see a linebacker go and ram their head against a running back every single play, because if that happened to me one time, I'd be in the hospital.
Yeah, same here. You know, I tell guys on the team all the time, I say, you know, I couldn't be a real football player. And I sincerely mean that. If I had to subject my body to the stuff they do, couldn't do it.
No,
I mean, I got hit once or twice this year, and you're like,
well, notably once.
No.
Yeah, you had a fairly notable piece of contact happen to you.
Yeah, first game of the year, so that's the way to start off.
Yeah. When you attacked his foot with your head.
Yeah.
He's checking his shoe size.
Yeah, from close. It's 11, from close up.
11 and a half, in case you're wondering.
What is the most authentic football experience you've had? Have you had contact moments on a football field?
I've had a few. One in particular, we were playing Buffalo, and as a kickoff, and the returner got past everybody, and he was heading towards the sideline, and I thought I would just kind of escort him off the field, and he thought differently. And as soon as we met at the sideline, he turned upfield and put his shoulder right here in my ribs. I think I landed about three rows in the stands, but I didn't take a breath until I got back over to the other sideline.
Thought process at that point as it was happening?
As it was happening was, is this real life? Am I dead? Or I wonder if I'm going to be able to play golf Tuesday.
Wow.
But when you are in the act of kicking, like I think the Titans running back Leon Washington had the biggest return against you this season.
Bringing up old stuff, huh?
How did it feel? You run onto the field, you do the kick. Is there a change in emotion that you have from suddenly, like, I am going to do this, I'm visualizing an incredible kick, to holy crap? Like, is there a moment to, like, suddenly a panic that occurs, or is it just at this point part of your experience, part of the game, and you feel you love the taste of blood in your mouth and you're ready to hit really hard?
Not my own blood, no. But you're right. It's something that you have to be able to focus on. Yeah, you know, it's such a short amount of time that you have to be the best at your ability right then. So, right, especially at kickoff, you have to hit the best kick you can and then go cover like a real football player and hope that the other 10 guys on the field do their job.
Do you practice tackling?
No. That would look hilarious, and I would probably get hurt doing it.
Yes.
Even though I'm 6'1", 205, that's big for normal people's standards, but.
So when that return is coming, are you just full of adrenaline, or do you feel a certain fear?
They should actually put some type of microchip in our head and get our thoughts whenever the C parts like that and the returner's one-on-one with us, because it's probably a lot of, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
In soccer, there's a thing called the goalkeepers union. All the goalkeepers feel as close, they say, to each other as they do often to members of their team. Did you feel, it's not like a punters kind of union, a special teams kind of
a fraternity.
Do you guys feel that? Have you texted the kickers who are in the Super Bowl? Do you have a relationship with those guys? Do you feel closer to the punters than you do to some of the?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Whenever that unfortunate incident happened in Week 1 this year versus the Steelers, I had a lot of texts from fellow kickers and punters around the league wanting to know where the funeral was going to be and stuff like that. I think even one of them changed my Wikipedia page and said that I died on the field that day, which is all in good fun.
Oh, that's good stuff. But yes, we, the kickers and punters, we all, you know, think it's basically like a little fraternity. We have 64 of us in the NFL, and a lot of us are close. A lot of us have been in the league for a while and play each other, you know, once, maybe twice a year if you're in the same division.
What part of the game percentage of your game is mental?
104%.
Yeah. And to me, that your mentality sort of grows with that baptism through fire when you get out there and something negative happens. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to stay positive and be in a good mental state when everything's going really well.
Yep.
But when you miss a big kick, or you hit a bad punt, or you give up field position or something like that, have a bad hold or anything like that, you sort of go in the dumps a little bit, and it's whether or not you can respond to that rather than stay.
Can you describe what it's like to take the field after you've just had a punt blocked and then to have to go and do it all over again? What do you think, holder to the snapper?
Sure, and you're definitely, you know, everybody says, you know, that you just sort of stay focused and you don't really think about it, and, you know, you think about it, trust me.
Yeah.
When you get your leg about broken off, you know, and you got your leg in the air,
didn't
you're
JJ
really...
Watt, like, yeah. take out your legs
yeah, JJ
a
Watt
times
hit me twice, you know, just a defensive player.
In a row.
It's whatever. he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get in that awkward position, and then you go out there the very next time, and you know that they just got beat, so you know that we're not 100% solid up front, and you know it's possible. But then at the end of the day, you have to do your job and trust your guys to do their job.
Hmm. You've played in London a few times.
Yep.
More than once, right?
Twice now.
Twice. You know, when we were kids, we used to watch American television, and one of the things we used to love about American television is the colors were different. And the colors were different because we thought the air was different in America than the air was
New York City, it's like
different air.
Quite smart.
But when you play in London...
There's also Howard Cassell, this is a different skin color than the English broadcast.
When you play in London, does the air feel the same as the air in America? Does it affect your kicking in any way?
No,
not whatsoever.
So kicking at Wembley was exactly the same as kicking...
There were different conditions in Wembley. The first year we played there, we played the 49ers, and outside of Wembley, the wind was blowing probably 30 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So I figured it was going to be...
It was a nice day.
It was,
I know. A nice day.
Yeah, well, that's a beautiful day in London. But in Jacksonville, that's a nasty day. But there was barely any wind in the stadium. Even though the roof was open, that stadium is great because it barely lets any wind in. But the field surface there is not for American football. It is slippery. There's not a lot of grass on it. So as a kicker, you have to basically, like, be twinkle toes on it and make sure you don't slip and fall when you kick.
It's funny because after the American football has been there, it's not a very good surface for soccer.
Yeah,
that's torn up.
Yeah, quick fire round for you, babe. Grass or turf?
Turf.
Turf.
Wind or rain?
Rain.
Rain.
When the opposing coach calls a timeout to ice you, does it ice you?
I think it's counterproductive.
Yeah, I agree because let's say the clock's running down and your heart's pounding a little fast and they call a timeout. That just gives you more time to compose yourself, catch your breath, calm your heart rate down a little bit, and prepare for the next kick.
When you wear different shoes, what do you do with the other shoe?
I have a locker full of left-footed cleats. It's unbelievable. I eventually just throw them away because I have one brand new cleat and one old cleat, so... Yeah,
I think we've got to auction off for charity.
We
kick a charity, left-footed cleats.
Well, it's funny.
Just wonderful.
It's funny you say that.
Of your much maligned art.
I actually have a kicker. Someone made a little custom box, like they call it a shadow box, with a shoe from college of mine in there that had like a game-winning field goal on it, and it was my left foot, the left shoe, and I was like, where did they get the? And they found it in my locker. And sure enough,
you've had a great soccer highlight in your career, around your promotion of one of the Jacksonville Jaguars game at Wembley. You got to kick a penalty at Wembley.
Tell us the story.
So England was playing San Marino.
Big game.
It was a huge game. Number one and number two in the world.
Yeah, 200.
I think it was like 9-0 at halftime, or 9-0, sorry. Yeah. So I got to kick a PK at halftime, and they had a professional goalie in there. And so the couple weeks leading up to it, I went out and practiced because I didn't want to screw up. I wanted to make it, and I drilled it.
And what penalty did you practice?
It was weird. I couldn't get the ball off the ground. So I tried. I did want to go like low left or low right. I wanted to put it, you know, either top right or top left. So before the game, I was talking to a lot of the British guys, and they were saying go top left. So that's where I went.
I've seen this penalty. I've seen video of this penalty. And all I can tell you is, can you please take some time out of your schedule, out of your golf game, go over there, teach the English national team how to take penalties.
There's not a single right-footed English player who can take a penalty like that one.
Cheap.
It's amazing.
It will not be cheap. It's
amazing. Were you more or less nervous taking a penalty than you were with a game-winning field goal?
I was a lot more nervous because when they announced my name, the fans kind of gave me like, who is this?
San Marino hooligans.
Yeah. The San Marinans were like, we didn't know they played soccer in America.
I was so nervous because the field was so slippery, I thought I was going to slip and fall. That was my only goal, was to not slip and fall.
Do you ever dream of throwing a touchdown pass on a fake field goal attempt to win the Super Bowl? Do you not have that, Jamie, or a fake punt?
Do you have a touchdown pass?
Yeah, I have a touchdown pass. Last year, threw one to Jordan Cameron in week two or week three. I think it was week three. Mm-hmm. We played Minnesota. And that, you're talking about nervous because he's wide open. And you're like, okay, here's your one time to shine. This is never, ever going to work ever again. From now on, every time they play the Browns, they're going to look outside.
Was that the hidden player?
So when the when the coach made that call, or was it the quarterback who made the call? Whoever made the call, were you like... were you aware of the reactions of the other of your teammates and what they were thinking at the point the call came in?
The O line, every time I come running on, like for a punt, they usually say something pretty snarky to me, like something like "don't shank it" or something like that.
Screw this up.
Fun like that.
But this is the opposing team, not your own team.
No, these are our own.
Your own guys.
Just like I would mess with them.
Oh my word!
So it was a lot of fun. But you know, we're running out there. And I tell the guys what the fake was, which was called Raven. And we put it in when we were playing the Baltimore Ravens. Really tricky.
So original.
Really tricky. And I told them Raven, and they like looked at me like, really? Yeah, we're really running. All right. And then they turned around, and you could hear them like sort of snickering themselves because the other team didn't know what was going on. Mm, a lot of that weird formation.
Well, that's they call it the hidden player, where the line runs up to, you know, attempt like a normal field goal, but someone casually just walks to the line of scrimmage, but they're right next to the sideline, so they snap it to the holder really quick, and he pops up and throws it. We had that in for me years ago, and I mean, it was ready to go, and we go get to the Saturday practice, and we try that, and I throw it about 10 yards over the receiver's head, and
the head coach just goes,
he just does one of these, and...
You ruined it for everybody.
I did.
Not just for you, but for every kicker. But when John Ryan, Seattle punter, threw that touchdown, was that a win and did the discount double check? Like that. Was that a win for all special teams? Like, did you feel a special bond?
You felt really good for him because we don't get... I mean, hey, at that point, he had more touchdown passes than Russell Wilson. So, good for him.
We've got a lot of young listeners who listen to this show. What single piece of life advice would you give them if they aspire, unlike you guys, in your youth, to be an NFL punter or kicker?
Chicks dig kickers. That's just ask my wife.
Yeah. Says your fiance.
Hey, we'll show you pictures of his fiance and my wife.
Yeah. That's great. That's it. That's all we have to do is to show to the kids and it'll all be fine.
That's right. Everybody's in after that.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Really appreciate it. Amazing guys, Rog.
For the next NFL season, I would like to get a glut. I find them fascinating. I find the mental side of the game fascinating. Yeah. I find the psychological, I find the physical, I find the whole part of being part of the squad but not really part of the squad. I would like to get a conclave of kickers.
Are you calling for a conclave of the kickers and punters?
Let's get a dozen together. We could make an amazing... No one can... Our message is punters are people too, right, David?
They are. Punters and kickers. They're all people too, Rog.
And you'll see snippets of the stuff we shot with them during the week. But I think it's going to run in the pre-game show when we're in Phoenix around 2:30, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing it. Still trying to edit it in the middle of Snowmageddon, Rog. But it should be delivered to NBC and it should air on Sunday during the pre-game. Okay, Rog, on to the Ravens. Our first Raven from Ben Krimmel. Is it just me, or is the Premier League better now that it is crap? Surely the league was of better quality when the likes of Ronaldo, Bale, Modric and Suarez played each week. But somehow, despite the lack of Premier League players on the extremely corrupt FIFA World 11, enjoyment could be at an all-time high. Last season, there was a crowded top and a crowded basement. The Downton League of only upstairs and down. Yet, the league this season is far more enjoyable because there is nothing but mid-table quality sides. And the Queen's Park Raisins, who couldn't beat the MIB 11 away from Loftus Road. Isn't it better that any moment any team, even the traditionally upstairs team, can completely capitulate? Is this Stockholm Syndrome? Have I become too invested in the narrative of my favourite weekend morning show? Or is the Premier League better now that every single team is an unpredictable mid-table side in which they could be good or they could be crap? I tell you, is it that different this season, Roger? He is right that some of the storied players, the Ronaldos, the Bales, the Modrics, the Suarezes, have gone. But I think we see these massive upsets in the Premier League, the bottom teams beating the top teams every single season.
I think this season is it's true in that we have two teams, City and Chelsea, who themselves in recent weeks are sputtering, but the quality of the other top teams, Liverpool, incredibly impoverished this season, Manchester United still this deep into the season trying to find a tactical lineup that fits the world-class players that they have surrounding them. Arsenal really trying to show that they can take a punch and that they don't have a glass jaw defensively. I think it's like that the race for fourth has never been more erratic, more unpredictable and more hilarious. And at the same time, there is a quality in a Leicester City or a Burnley that we haven't seen. The teams that you can absolutely reliably pound do not exist on this regular basis, Dave. I'd say it reminds me this season, Leo Tolstoy said all great literature is one of two stories. A man goes on a journey or a stranger comes to town. And I think there's just, this season, more men going on more journeys. Those journeys include far more cul-de-sacs and clown cars than in previous seasons. And the stranger who comes to town is Frank Lampard, who's three massive storylines in one. He's both Luke Skywalker or Darth Vader, depending on where you're looking at him from. And it makes for a special kind of intoxicating magic.
Yeah, absolutely. Rog, OK, the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers, poet, philosopher, Saka, scribe, raven of the week is Brett Smith from Buffalo. Rog, I've been listening to the pod for quite a while now. In fact, I've been listening since you used to regularly refer to Davo as Mickey. Remember that, Rog? The reason I bring this up is I recently got an email from a person named Mickey for a job interview. And of course, I responded to accept the interview offer with a dear mister. Turns out, after going to the company website, that this Mickey is a woman. Of course, I immediately wrote an apologetic email describing myself as a boneheaded Anglophile. I also dismissed any chance of ever walking in for said interview, given that this was for a public relations firm. My questions to you are, one, can you please make me feel a little better and tell me that Mickey is generally assumed to be a man's name in the UK? Two, have you ever been guilty of a case of mistaken gender? Thanks for any response. Size the day, Brett Smith. Mickey, is Mickey any more, is it different in America and Britain as to whether Mickey is a boy's name or a girl's name? I'm not sure.
In England, Mickey, it means to mock.
Yeah, to take the mickey out of someone. Yeah.
Yeah, to take the mickey out of someone with sickening enthusiasm, I think, would be a dictionary definition. There's Mickey Sumner, Sting's daughter, struggling actress. You know Mickey Winters, Dave, Playboy's Playmate of the Month, the September 1962 issue. You talk about her all the time.
Well, not personally.
There's Hey Mickey.
Yeah.
By the great...
Tony Basil. Tony Basil, Rog. That's why I was called Mickey Davis in school, because of that song.
It's an unbelievable piece of music, but I think Mickey in that song was actually a bloke.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've got any advice as a Mickey Davis who's led Brett Smith into disarray.
I really don't. There are just sometimes in life where you put your foot in the mouth. This feels like a fairly inadvertent foot in the mouth, and you just got to suck it up and go on.
In terms of mistaken gender... I can say that I'm occasionally mistaken for a man.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I've ever mistaken any of the gender. I mean, the worst possible foot-in-mouth thing, and I've witnessed this happen a few times, thank God I've never done it myself, is guys or women who congratulate other women on being pregnant when they're not actually pregnant. That is just the worst possible thing that any human can actually do to another human. And my advice for all men is just you never, I don't care whether they look like they are 9.5 months pregnant and they're talking about going to the hospital to pop out a baby, you never ever mention it until you've literally seen a doctor's certificate to know that a woman is pregnant.
I agree. I want to see a scan.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to see a scan before I will ever talk about any woman's pregnancy. Okay, Roger, weekend looks like this. Chelsea versus Manchester City, Saturday at 12:30 on NBC, on the network, Rog. Looks like we're going to be watching that in Arizona from the truck, Rod, from the NBC truck. Arsenal versus Aston Villa, that's on Sunday at 8:30 a.m. on NBC Sports Network. And Southampton versus Swansea, another great game of football, Rog, Sunday at 11 a.m. on NBCSN also.
Those of you who are in Arizona, if you are going to be at the golf on Friday or the Madden Bowl on Thursday night, come. give us a cuddle, raise a glass of Guinness with us. We'd love to see you.
Absolutely. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page. Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating this podcast. What are you putting in the Emporium this week, Rog?
A book. An amazing book. 872 pages, Dave.
Yeah.
Modernity Britain, 1957 to 62, by David Kynaston.
Oh, that sounds good.
It's part three. It's a visionary social history that's called The New Jerusalem. And the author, he's an English social historian. He recreates the experience of actually living in that period by mining the diaries of political and establishment leaders and letters, articles, questionnaires of the ordinary lump and masses. It covers that post-war period in which England stumbled into modernity, in which innocence was shattered, hope was completely evaporating, and there was just this amazing, marvellous gallows humour all the way. It pervaded every ounce of life. It's a massive book and a massive human achievement, and for real, real Anglophiles, I'd say it's a must-read.
Yeah. Rog, I'm also putting a book in. You know, I don't read that many books anymore because television is so good. Rog. But this book, Forbidden Forward, the Justin Fashanu story. This is an older book, but it's available on Amazon. Story about Justin Fashanu. I mean, one of the great early players in the Premier League. The first player of Afro-Caribbean descent in Britain to make £1 million. That's like, you know, $1.5 million a year. Also the first professional footballer, soccer player in Britain to come out as gay, Rog. A brilliant story about a brilliant footballer, just moving and quite dark tale. Meninblazers.wikispaces.com. That's another way to connect to us. It's a wonder of the modern world. Meninblazers.com. You can sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, there, which we produce with our partner, Guinness. You can follow us on Twitter at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers, on Instagram at Men in Blazers, or at Embassy_Davies, and like us on Facebook. Check out our Facebook page. It's getting better and better, that Facebook page, Rog. We've got a subreddit. That's meninblazers.reddit.com. That's maintained by GFOPs, Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. We also have a Spotify account, Rog. Search for men_in_blazers. It has our very first Men in Blazers mixtape. It's a collection of songs near and dear to us. You can always send your ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com, Rog. Vendorpunk, Rog.
Dominate!
Who wants the Sex Mutombo?
Oh, war pig.
Courage.
Creme de la crap!
Is that your analysis?
Super Bowl shuffle.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu fight in America. I love you, David.
Love you, Rog. Have fun in your parents' bed. See you in Arizona.